Good evening. Casper Citron from the Algonquin Hotel on West 44th Street in New York City. Not very long ago, a play won the Pulitzer Prize. The man that wrote the play, Paul Zindel, is my guest, and the man that produced the play, Orrin Lehman. The play, shortened to Marigolds, the full title, The Effect of Gamma Rays on Man in the Moon, Marigolds. It also won the New York Drama Critics Award as the Best American Play of the Year, as well as more awards than any other play in the past 5 years. I guess the obvious beginning would be to ask producer Orrin Lehman, who incidentally is an old friend from our early Democratic days when we both were active in politics, where did you first meet Paul and how did the production start?
Well, I think the first time was at Paul's agent sent me the play, and it was so much better than anything I'd read up till then, because as you know, I'm pretty new in this business, that I immediately wanted to do it and got to meet Paul, and it wasn't long before we did it.
You've been involved in the theater for at least 4 or 5 years, haven't you?
No, about 2 years.
Is that all it is?
Yes, this is my first independent production.
It was Jules Pfeiffer.
There I was a co-producer, and I must say that with those plays, great deal of the credit goes to Alan Arkin, the director, and as a co-producer, you really are not quite as involved as you are when you produce independently.
How many scripts would you say you read before Paul's came along?
Oh, I think probably 100, and Paul sort of stood out like a star, and we wanted to do it very badly.
Paul, had your script been making the rounds, or was this one of its first stops?
Well, my script was making the rounds for 8 years. In fact, it'd been around for so long, I forgot about it myself. And I just couldn't understand why a producer didn't step in with the guts to do it. I always thought it was going to be successful. And then after 8 years, Orrin appeared as though out of nowhere, and I really had given up that anyone would do a first-class production in New York.
And, Orrin, when you read the script, then this immediately was a play that you wanted to produce.
Yes.
So you then took the necessary steps.
That's right.
How long did it take from the time you read the script until the time the play actually opened off-Broadway?
I think it took about 4 months, but of course it went to rehearsal for about a month before that, so about 3 months altogether. I was in England at the time when I first read it, and not when I first read it, when I read it the second time, and when we arranged things.
Well, now, there are producers and producers. I imagine one type could be that just puts up the money and stays in England. Another type could be one that takes a very active part in casting and hiring and supervising and everything else. Which were you?
Well, I think I was a very active producer, but on the other hand, an active producer has to know where he's wanted and where he isn't wanted. In other words, he's not, certainly if you see an actress do something you don't like, it's not your position to say, well, don't do this. It's either the director or the author through the director, but not the producer to go up to the actress or the actor and say, well, this is not right. And I think if you're talking about the writer, the most important part of a play, if you have a suggestion to make, you make a suggestion, but you certainly can't make him change it. And I think you only make suggestions that you think might have some value, but not many. I mean, you make some here and there about basic changes or small changes, but so I think you have to know where to stay out.
Well, now, Paul Zindel, I asked Orrin how we first ran into the script. What was your first meeting with Orrin after he had read the script?
Well, I remembered I was sitting at rehearsal, and I knew that a man called Orrin Lehman had stepped in and was going to produce my play, and here we were at the first day of rehearsal, and I had not met Orrin. And then suddenly the rear doors of the theater swung open, and all I knew was I felt extremely grateful that such a person appeared. And he was always there during rehearsal, and he has a gift that I don't have. You see, I have to open my big mouth every time I get a single thought in it. But Orrin is able to select the right moment to offer his suggestion, and In fact, it was one suggestion that he gave about the end of Act One that I kept ignoring. I kept hearing it on various occasions. He would slip it in very quietly. And then finally, after I listened carefully to what he said one day, I realized he really had the secret to the end of that act, which we really hadn't found before.
What Paul says is really the quality of, I think, of his play was, I'd forgotten really where we had met. But as Paul said, we met for the first time in rehearsal. Now, ordinarily, if you option a play, you have many, many meetings with the author before you actually get into rehearsal. This play was so ready to go and so good that we didn't, apparently. I'd forgotten, but we hadn't, and we met for the first time in rehearsal. Because the play was ready.
When you say it was ready, you mean it didn't have to be revised, is what you're saying?
No, it really didn't need any rewrites. At that time, I say, as Paul said, we made a few changes as we went along in rehearsal, but there were no rewrites necessary. It was just about the play it is today then.
Well, Paul, from reading up a bit about you in the many interviews after you're winning the Pulitzer Prize, you're just about 30 now, and I gather that your background was not one of affluence, to say the least.
Right. The only thing is, at the time, I didn't know I was poor. I had a mother which was fairly strong, and she had a lot of strange and weird things about her. But one of the things was that we never knew we were poor at the time. But like, I didn't know what theater was. I was never raised around music of any type. Maybe drinking rum and Coca-Cola was one record that the family owned maybe for 10 years. But so I really came from a cultural abyss, but probably my family did pass on to me some of the more important qualities about understanding humanity.
Your family passed this on to you?
Yeah, you bet they did. Yes.
Well, Paul, what I'm still, I can't quite figure out, with no exposure to speak of to theater, where did the talent come from?
Well, it's my belief that all artists, all playwrights, actresses, actors, these people have something which sits in their gut and is placed there as a child growing up. And in most cases, it's usually a person who has had to create a tremendous fantasy life due to probably being pistol-whipped by the environment in which they grew up. A subdued personality which has to find some way to express itself. And so theater, I've always believed, is something that is born in you and perhaps more closely molded in you during the first years of your life. It's almost a curse.
It's something that has to come out one way or another.
Yes.
I think that's true probably even of those writers who write sort of sociological plays like, they're very good plays, but like Sidney Kingsley when he wrote Men in White and some of those sort of plays, that I think that had to come out of him too, although it was more of a, when you say on a sociological level and then on a... Well, yours is more on a psychological level, I would say.
Well, you see, even though the content, the surface content of a play may appear to be detached, almost scientific in nature, but for any true writer, that when I look at his works, always below it is a pattern that's traceable to the to their early youth.
Environment, yeah.
Yes.
What, Oren Lehman, when the Pulitzer Prize was given to the play, was this like an immediate hypo to the box office?
Oh, yes, enormously so. I think it's probably, as far as the play is concerned, and in terms of box office, which you're talking about now, probably the greatest award you can get. I don't know if all playwrights and all people consider it that. For instance, the Drama Critics Award by some people might be considered a greater award, and Paul won both, but... I think that as far as box office, the Pulitzer is nationally and in New York by far the greatest.
And the minute this happens, tickets start to be in demand.
Yes, we were doing pretty well before then because we'd won these many other awards and the play, word of mouth was good about the play, but certainly we got a strong boost from the Pulitzer, no question about that.
Was there any indication or did you have any rumors or did you know that you were nominated, if there is such a thing?
I think we knew we were nominated, because I guess a number of people nominated, but yes, we knew we were nominated, sure. Oh yes, that we did know. But that, I guess all plays practically are nominated by the producer or by somebody, or a friend, or the author's mother maybe, or somebody. Mm-hmm. But then it gets down to the, but that has nothing to do with which play wins it, of course.
Paul, do you have any feeling of that now you have to live up to this for your next drama? Mm. You know, sort of like the sophomore jinx in baseball. You're a star the first year, and now you've got this reputation. What happens? Of course, Edward Albee is a classic example.
Well, I'm aware of the fact that there are many critics, there are many people who have a totally unrealistic view of what one's career, what a writer's entire spectrum will look like. I'm aware of those forces, I'm aware of what they're looking for, but I can't let that affect the work I have to do. As I said before, the work I have to do was laid out for me a long time ago, and I have to proceed along that schedule, and I can't let these other forces do that. For example, one of my next plays next year, and there are probably going to be three of them, involves the sexuality of a shipyard worker. Now, that may not be considered as lofty a project as my next play that I have scheduled after that, which is a bit more literary and probably more to the liking of those people who expect something very lofty of me. But also, I think playwrights ought to keep their foot in the gutter once in a while, too, to keep it alive, because drama takes a hell of a lot of life and guts to make it go. And there's the third word of time I've said, guts.
Well, now, Paul, obviously you fancy yourself as a very well-ordered person. You say this is laid out and that is laid out. How many years in the future are you planned? You sound like a computer is spewing out what you're going to do.
Look, it took 8 years to find Oren Lehman, who was to produce my play. If you've got 8 years to plan your life and to be writing and backed up, I'm so backed up on plays it isn't funny. So at least I know what the next 10 years look like. And then after that, you know, I'll worry about it as I get there.
Is it possible, though, that even though you have these plays that either are ideas or already have been written, is it possible that any of them you would not feel today are good examples of your work?
Right. I tried to prepare one this week, and I cut it, I re-examined it, and I ended up throwing it across the room. It was a piece of junk. It's no good. So I've always been my worst critic, I think. And I have to, I'm not going to make the public suffer in catching up to me. But during the last few years, there have been certainly so many ideas for plays that I feel must be written, that I'm anxious to get on with those.
Oren, have you read any of his other plays?
No, but I'm looking forward to reading one this next week. And these are supposed to be two short plays. When I say short plays, two one-act plays. And I'm very, very anxious to read them, because I know they're going to be good.
How do you feel about this sort of, as you mentioned, it's a two-year career for yourself as a producer. In the past, you've been active in politics, you've been a candidate, you've been active publishing newspapers. How do you assess the differences in this career from some of the others that you've been pursuing?
Well, I think that this career is very, very different from every other one I've ever had, except for perhaps politics. And of course, my political career was rather short-lived, but there are many things in show business that are similar. I think, for instance, your play is your platform, and that is, your play is what you stand for. And in politics, and I think that timing has a lot to do with it. For instance, I think that timing in a play is extremely important when you bring it out, and I think it's true in politics that American people voted for Warren Harding in 1920. They apparently were ready for that type of government. They voted for FDR in 1933 and so on. And I think your staff in politics is very much like your staff in the theater. Your directors and your scenic designers, they all add to the thing. You also have the problem of raising money, which we read so much in the papers recently about political fundraising. And the same goes on in the theater. You have to raise money. But basically, I think that people in the theater and the people in politics, the American voter, are looking for integrity. Now, I don't say they always get it, but they look for that. They don't get it on Broadway, and they don't get it in politics. I think that's been one of the great virtues of Paul's play Marigolds, and that is it has great integrity. If you have seen it, you'll know that almost every word that comes out of the actresses is really there, would come out of them, and it strikes a completely honest note. And I think that you have to do that in politics if you're really going to be successful. Now, we've had phonies in politics, and there have been some phony plays that have succeeded to some extent, but I think a really great play and a really good politician has integrity.
Well, isn't that what theater is supposed to represent, what people actually do say, not what one would think they would say?
Exactly. And not what the author is really, not the author expounding on his own, but putting words into other people's mouths. Now, they're his words, they're his ideas, but it has to come naturally out of the actor or actress's mouth, I think. And so you believe them. And that's what's so great about Marigolds, I believe.
Who directed Marigolds, Paul or Oren?
Well, Melvin Bernhardt, and I think he's done a very fine job. He's out in California now, doing Marigolds at Los Angeles. Rachel Roberts is going to do it out there, and we have high hopes. We'll see.
Will there be a film?
Yes. So Paul can tell you a little bit more about that. But yes, Paul Newman took an option on it for his wife, and you might as well continue from here,
right,
Paul.
That's right. Joanne Woodward will play the role, and then today's what, June 1st. Mm. Today's the day when a big lump of cash is supposed to arrive for Mr. Newman.
I should know that, I didn't.
But even if
he was last reported in New Zealand.
Even if he doesn't take it, we have a lot of other movie people lined up, but I'm sure that they will, because it would make a marvelous movie for his wife, I think, and with him directing. I liked what they did with Rachel.
Well, now, when you say this been about the cash, this means he took an option and the payment is due, is that what you're
right,
saying?
Right, yes. You know,
not
you
on
break
the option, now he would pick up his option to really do
to
it.
Exercise
to exercise it. Exactly, to exercise the option.
Do you find this world of business or in the theater completely different than any other kind of business that you've been involved in? Is it a world to itself?
Yes, I think so, because it's extremely human. Most all your problems, if you have a bad play, then you have lots of problems, but if you have a good play, then your problems become mostly human problems. I mean, dealing with people, with very artistic people, some of them very temperamental, most of them are very nice, but it's a very human business, and that's one of the things I like about it most.
What I would like to see is producers state that, you know, when a play opens, that it's going to play a certain length of time, regardless of what we critics have to say, because very often, you know, a play will be the kind of a play that could build up, and the producer chickens out the first night or the second night, and that's the end.
Well, Casper, you can buck the critics to some extent, but not too much. I mean, it's true if one or two critics don't like your play, or even maybe three or four, but if it gets generally bad reviews, you can't buck that. I mean, no matter what you try, maybe you can point to examples, like I think Walter Winchell claimed that he made Hell's a Poppin' or something like that, but that was years ago. It's very, very tough to...
But I'm thinking more of defeatism, Oren Lehman. There have been a number of plays that have posted their closing notices before a review ever came out.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous, of course. You have great faith in your play.
They just... How would a cast feel on opening night to see the notice up already, even though they think they haven't got a chance or something?
Well, I think they feel pretty awful. You have to remember that some producers have a lot of capital behind them, and that's terribly important. Others don't. Either some producers have some independent wealth of their own, or else they have a good reputation and they can raise money rather easily. Other producers tend to produce a little bit on a shoestring, and it makes it awfully difficult. And if they worry, they put up this notice, and then they can always take it down, I guess, or something like that. But I don't. It is defeatist, and I think it's very bad policy if you don't have that faith in your own play.
We talked about in the beginning that there's a possibility that you may have some other plays next season.
Yeah.
Are any of them announced or anything?
Yes, it was one play by a man named Jason Miller, and it's funny. This Paul's play has five women in it. Jason's play has five men in it. It's about the reunion of a basketball team 20 years afterwards, and their coach is a very dominant figure. And we have high hopes of that play. I do have options in other plays, but that is the only one that looks, aside from the play that Paul will show me this week, that's the only one that really looks like it's going to go on next fall.
When one takes an option on a play, how long a period is this generally for?
Well, generally it works for 6 months with maybe a renewal of a year, for 6 months and then another 6 months. So maybe a year and a half would be about it. And you might get another one, but a year and a half, I'd say, would be about.
Well, does the option go against the purchase price, or is this just something that's sort of a bonus that you pay?
It's a bonus you pay, but it's really very, it's probably that's the most inexpensive thing in the, I shouldn't say this with Paul right here, but probably that's the most inexpensive thing you have in the theater, and that is the options that playwrights get, because here somebody's, you know, really worked terribly hard for 2 or 3 years on a play, and a producer can option it for off-Broadway. I think the minimum is maybe $250 for, I don't know,
$250?
Yeah, for 6 months.
You mean you can tie up a play for that long?
Well, for 6 months, and then it goes on and on. It isn't quite that bad.
Very fair,
it might come to around $1,000 or a little over that, over a year and a half. Mm. But I say you can tie it up, yes, for quite a while. Of course, agents aren't going to give you these plays if you just take them and tie them up. They expect you to produce them, but or at least many of them. But I think that is probably the only thing I think is inexpensive about Broadway. The rest of it's very expensive, and I think sometimes much too much.
Well, it sounds very unfair. For instance, if somebody with $1,000 wanted to prevent Paul from bringing his play in for a year and a half, they could just do that, couldn't they?
No, but Paul wouldn't give him the play, though, unless he was terribly tricky, and then he probably would never get another play, you know, if he did something like that.
I thought that history was full of people having options and having them run out and not using them or something.
Well, it does happen that way, but not purposely. I mean, you often say to the agent, look, I like your play. It's a good play, but it isn't ready yet, I don't think. And if you want to option it to me on that basis, that we're going to work on it and see what we can do with it, and the agent says, all right, and the author says, okay, then sometimes you do work for a year and do try it out in various spots, and it doesn't work, or you don't think it works anyway, then you drop your option. But that isn't trickery. I mean, that's sincere. And the author very often is willing to admit it isn't quite working, and maybe some other producer will pick it up and really do a good job with it.
Paul, no one had optioned you in 8 years on Gamera's?
Oh, yes, but they always, I mean, it would sound cruel for me to say no one did, because there were a lot of people that came forth, but they came forth in very strange ways. Like, one woman optioned it and got a production for me out of town, and she used, for a starring lady, she used a Copacabana, an ex-Copacabana dance girl, who did not, you know, bring too much to the part. And then we had another woman, I had a producer before Oren, who optioned it, who was throwing these magical dice to call upon the spirits to lead her into how she should be handling the production. And you see, a playwright would give the play, would even pay a producer to take their play if they had any sense that there'd be a possible production. It's strictly only a token payment anyway, the option money, but it's you enter into it with the best of faith.
Well, I think also there are good writers and there are good producers, and they're both fairly scarce. And I think that now that Paul is this very, very great success, I think that all the better producers are going to want to produce his plays.
Well, Paul, from what you're saying, that you must have written the play when you were, what, 21, 22?
No, I'm 35 now. I accepted 30 before very quietly, but 35.
Well, you could pass for 30.
Thank you. I wrote it 20 when I was about 27.
Well, then you've been struggling for a long time. If you're 35.
Yes, but again, I didn't know I was struggling. Don't forget, I was a chemistry teacher, and I was earning my huge sum of $10,000 a year. And so I didn't think of myself as a writer, but the writing was that automatic process that just kept building up until I looked back and I realized I'd written enough plays to maybe be a playwright.
Now no more chemistry.
Right. 10 years of teaching chem was just fine, but I may return to it in some other guise in a few more years.
Where did you teach?
I taught at Tottenville High School on Staten Island.
I'm talking with Oren Lehman, the producer, and Paul Zindel, the playwright of Marigolds, which is called, the full title is The Effect of Gamma Rays on Man and the Moon Marigolds. Oren, is this an indefinite run now here in town?
Yes, we hope to run for a good long while.
And you mentioned, particularly apropos of our listeners around the country, you have a company that's going to open in San Francisco, or is open?
No, there's one opening in Los Angeles on June 10th, and there's one in Boston now. We've had them pretty much around the country, but there is a very, very good company in Boston right now.
Who plays the lead in the Boston company?
Arlene Heckert has been playing it.
She's great.
And Betty Fields is going in after Arlene leaves.
You're getting very good people
for
the national companies, aren't you?
Oh, very, very fine people, yes. Couldn't be better.
The Boston company is playing now.
Yes.
How did the critics receive it in Boston?
Quite well. Mm-hmm. Quite well. It got good reviews. It was very good reviews, really, and we had a tough time because they didn't have much of rehearsal there, and the play is really perfect now, but when they opened, I think there was a little nervousness in the cast, but the critics received the play extremely well.
Do you rush around the country to be at all these different openings?
Well, I certainly try to get to as many as possible. We had one in Chicago and Toronto and Washington and California, and there are probably been others that I've forgotten, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more before this play is finished.
Do you notice any difference in or nuances in the roles of the different companies, the way the different persons play them?
Well, there's a great difference in the way the various actresses play them, but I think another difference is the director. Now, Melvin Bernhardt, who directed in New York, directed it also in Boston and also in Los Angeles. Another director would take a different tack, perhaps. Not a basically different tack, but enough to make it different. And I think that would be your main difference. What do you think, Paul, in your play?
Yes, by all means. Of course, every actress is a little bit different, too. But the director is the key.
Well, wouldn't you take a dim view of the director making major changes of interpretation?
Oh, no. You see, I am a writer. I write a play, and I stay with it for an initial production in New York. After that, I have to move on to other work, or I would spend the rest of my life tracking this play across the country. I can't possibly oversee them, and in the initial creation of a play, anyway, it should be designed so that even in the hands of amateurs, the major ideas survive the most heinous assault.
But that isn't always so, is it?
I have seen a few heinous assaults that the play has not survived. No, it really has done marvelously, even in Mexico and Montreal, and I've caught the one in Montreal in French. A good play really does make the grade, even under amateur circumstances.
I thought that a good play still could be hacked up by a bad director.
Well, I guess some of them can, but I think Paul is right that a very good play will stand up pretty well, unless it's a terrible director. But we wouldn't allow that, I mean, and neither would Paul, because Paul, we all have approval. And if we really thought the director was a hack, we wouldn't hire him. So we'd only hire a good director, but he might have a different interpretation than Melvin Bernhardt.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for coming to the Algonquin this evening. I've been talking about the play which just won the Pulitzer Prize, Marigolds, the effect of gamma rays on man in the moon, Marigolds, playwright Paul Zindel, the producer Orrin Lehman. We'll be looking forward to new plays by Paul coming up, all those plays that you've been sitting on, as you said. And Orrin Lehman, what was the one that you said you may be having next year?
Well, it's called That Championship Season.
Right, about the five basketball players.
The reunion, yes.
I hope everyone will stay tuned in Monday through Friday, same time, same stations around the country, same places on the dial. If you have any suggestions about the program, possible guests that haven't been interviewed, or about past interviews, drop me a line here at the Algonquin Hotel on West 44th Street in mid-Manhattan. In the meanwhile, stay tuned in Monday through Friday nights, the same stations. This is Caspar Citrin saying good night from the Algonquin in New York City.